Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Geopolitical Report. I'm Phil Adler. The race between the United States and China for military superiority will continue to have major implications for investors. Confluence Associate Market Strategist Daniel Ortworth joins us today to give us an update on the U.S.-China military balance of power. Daniel, your last update was 2 years ago. Before we get to specifics, what is your overall impression? Should we be more worried today about China's military capabilities than we were 2 years ago?
Yes, Phil, I think we should. The simple truth is that China continues to invest heavily in its armed forces, showering it with the resources necessary to continue on a path to becoming a world-class military. Its defense budget is estimated to have grown nearly 6% from 2023 to 2024, and the Chinese government has announced plans to increase its 2025 defense budget by an additional 7.2%. I should emphasize that these numbers might actually understate the true pace of increases. The Chinese disguise their military spending in a number of ways that blend civilian and military development programs and make it hard to compare it with other defense budgets, such as our own. The latest U.S. Department of Defense report on Chinese military power estimates that Chinese military spending probably exceeds the published figures by 40 to 90%. Two things about that statement should grab our attention. First, it suggests that the true number could be almost double the official Chinese defense budget. Second, 40 to 90 is a very wide range. If a study is thorough and diligent as the DoD study cannot narrow the range more than that, it tells us just how much we really don't know about the full extent of the Chinese military buildup.
What do we know about China's main focus? Is it Taiwan, or does China have grander intentions?
Chinese leadership has a vision that unfolds in stages. Initially, yes, Taiwan is the focal point of what we might call stage one of its strategic plan, which is the full unification of all Chinese territory. Now, this stage is not all about Taiwan. It includes things such as the eradication of terrorism and separatism in its western provinces, namely Xinjiang and Tibet, and the establishment of full control and internationally recognized sovereignty over the South China Sea. Still, the so-called reunification of Taiwan under the control of the government in Beijing is the clear number one on that list of stage one priorities. Ultimately, though, the Chinese government has a vision called the Great Rejuvenation of the Chinese Nation. In this vision, China achieves what it considers a full restoration of itself as the world's premier state, exercising a leadership role in global affairs. To this end, General Secretary Xi Jinping has set the goal for the People's Liberation Army to develop into a world-class military by 2049. That phrase, world-class military, means the capability to succeed in a confrontation with the best military forces in the world, and the clear implication in the documents articulating this vision is the ability to beat the United States. So, Phil, it's yes to both. Taiwan is number one on the agenda now, but that agenda has grander intentions stretching well into a future in which China is the global number one.
Well, Daniel, let's focus on just a few of the key areas covered in your report this week. First, expenditures on military resources. Is China pouring more resources into its military than we are into ours?
No, Phil, I don't think so. As discussed earlier, we cannot be absolutely sure due to the lack of clarity in Chinese reporting, but the U.S. defense budget is nearly $1 trillion, which is almost certainly larger than the Chinese budget by any measure. However, the key in this comparison is to understand it in the context of each country's scope of commitments. At this point in history, the Chinese military is still mainly focused on its own neighborhood, meaning East Asia and the seas adjacent to its own coastline. China does have expanding long-term military ambitions, but for now its focus and commitments are still close to home. Meanwhile, the U.S. has a global network of bases, treaty commitments, and interests that it supports. With these global commitments in mind, 2024 U.S. defense spending was equal to about $5,000 for every square mile of the Earth's surface, excluding Antarctica. If we assume China's current core interests extend only over the eastern half of the Northern Hemisphere, about one quarter of the Earth's surface, its total adjusted spending in 2024 equaled about $13,000 per square mile of its defense sphere.
How about military technology? Does the U.S. still have a technological edge?
Mostly, but the gap is shrinking across the board, and in some places the gap may have entirely closed. The U.S. certainly does invest very heavily in technology and is doing so now with more urgency, but China has very effectively focused its technology investments in the areas most critical to likely near-term conflict scenarios. By that, we mean Taiwan and the South China Sea. We will talk more about this later, but the one area that I would emphasize is missile technology. China has developed an entire range of missiles designed for just about any purpose, and this would prove a key advantage in a fight close to China's own coast.
Well, before we get to missile technology, how has the Chinese Navy grown in the past 2 years compared to the United States?
Phil, this might be the area of greatest concern. China's shipbuilding capacity is the greatest in the world, while the U.S.'s capability in this area has languished. This is a story of its own for another day, but the result has clearly manifested itself in the relative sizes of the two navies. While the ship count of the U.S. battle force remains essentially the same as 2 years ago, China's battle force grew by at least 30 ships in that time, and that does not include 60 coastal patrol ships that the Chinese Navy transferred to its coast. Coast Guard. Those ships are smaller and older, but they are also equipped with ominous missile capabilities that would certainly play a role in a conflict in China's neighborhood. To be fair, the U.S. retains sizable advantages in the most capable platforms that are essential to global power projection, such as aircraft carriers and nuclear submarines. However, China has built some of its greatest advantages in the platforms most essential to an invasion of Taiwan, such as amphibious landing ships.
Daniel, is it the same story for the air forces of the two countries? Is China making up ground?
Although China is making up ground, I would not call it the same story. Whereas the gap shrinkage in naval assets is alarming, the U.S. has done more to preserve its advantage in the air, with the introduction and fielding of newer platforms, such as the F-35, the F-15EX, and the KC-46. The U.S. has made appreciable strides to recapitalize its force and stay ahead. More recently, the announcements of the newest designs, the F-47 and the B-21, introduce a set of future platforms that no one else in the world can match. Still, China has made great strides, even in just the last 2 years, to upgrade its air forces. Historically, China relied heavily on older generation fighters, but it has largely replaced that legacy fleet with newer designs that can compete in the modern world. Even with the older designs, China has made difference-making upgrades to key components such as engine upgrades.
Well, let's talk about missiles now, both conventional and nuclear. What stands out to you about progress China is making in these areas?
Phil, I want to point out two things that really grab my attention here. Breadth of types and sheer numbers. Whereas the U.S. is historically focused on certain particular missile types, admittedly in part due to treaty compliance obligations, but also due to a choice to focus on prioritized capabilities, the Chinese have sought to flood the battle space with large volumes of many types of missiles. Here we are talking about range, payload, intended target, and even launcher types such as fixed versus road mobile. The weight of effort in this area gives strong evidence of what China is trying to achieve. First, they are trying to make it as difficult and risky as possible for the U.S. to enter the Taiwan or South China Sea battle spaces with its naval assets. For instance, if a U.S. aircraft carrier got too close to Taiwan, it would face a hailstorm of missiles capable of sinking it. Second, they're trying to make the targeting problem for any enemy seeking to neutralize those missiles as difficult as possible. With so many of them, of so many types, located in so many places, a foe such as the U.S. would have to expend a tremendous amount of effort and resources to get them all. Now, I shouldn't end this thought without mentioning Chinese efforts to further develop its nuclear force. The last 2 years have witnessed intense activity in remote stretches of China in the form of new silos for intercontinental ballistic missiles. According to estimates, China now has 300 such silos, which they are filling with new technology ICBMs. At this rate, China's nuclear force is projected to achieve parity with the U.S. sometime next decade.
Daniel, there are so many aspects to this subject of military strength, including cyberspace, espionage, aerospace. You provide details in your report that we really don't have time to go into here, but my impression is that China is becoming a more formidable opponent in all of these areas. Am I correct?
Yes, Phil, you are. I agree. We just don't have the time to go into detail, but I will take a moment to highlight one thing. It was only 10 years ago that China established a new military organization called the Strategic Support Force, or SSF, to house and direct all of these seemingly supplemental parts of their defense structure. Well, just last year, they disbanded the SSF and reassigned these functions to report directly to the highest command level of their military, the Central Military Commission, headed by Xi Jinping himself. The message was clear. These are not just supplemental functions. They are core to how China expects to wage any future full-spectrum war.
Well, if we could do some summing up, in what areas does the United States still appear to hold a clear advantage militarily, and where does China have an edge?
Phil, I'm going to take this in perhaps an unexpected direction. The United States has 53 treaty allies around the world with which it has mutual defense agreements. These are countries with whom the U.S. and the treaty ally are obligated to come to each other's aid if attacked. Now, this might seem like a burden for the U.S. with so many commitments. However, that list includes key East Asian countries such as Japan, South Korea, and the Philippines. These countries share our view of China as an increasing threat. They are increasingly aligning their policies on this threat with the U.S., including increased joint training exercises, China-focused training exercises, and they are expanding their militaries, largely with U.S.-made equipment. Meanwhile, China has one single mutual defense ally, North Korea. Follow the news flow and you can see that while North Korea has proven to be a dilemma for China due to its erratic behavior, the recent statements of U.S. allies show clear that if China initiated military aggression against U.S. interests in the region, we very likely would not have to face that aggression alone.
Well, you mentioned earlier in our discussion the U.S. global military commitment, which might be seen as a burden. Do you think the United States is shifting its major attention to China now and hopes to create a world where we can avoid major confrontations with more than one power at once? And that's why the U.S. is withdrawing support from other parts of the world that have been traditionally important since the end of World War II.
Phil, I think it has become clear that the U.S. has made China its number one strategic military priority. Across a range of actions, from key appointments of China hawks in the Pentagon, through sustained encouragements of our European allies to increase their share of the defense burden, to these increasingly frequent and realistic joint training exercises in the Pacific, the shift in priority seems pretty clear.
Let's turn, Daniel, finally to investment implications. If we can expect trade and military tensions to remain high or even get worse, what options are there for investors?
Phil, I know we have been heavily emphasizing some of the same themes in recent reports, but the U.S.-China military face-off might be the single strongest contributor to these themes. In particular, I'm talking about bloc formation and all of its effects, such as the disruption of trade, technology, and capital flows between the U.S. and China blocs. In this environment, Chinese stocks and the equities of countries allied with China are likely to be especially at risk. In contrast, if the U.S. seeks to offer economic and security incentives to its allies and neutral countries to wean them away from China, those countries' stocks might benefit. With tensions boosting defense budgets all over the world, we continue to believe that defense industry stocks have bright prospects. This may be especially true for European defense companies as countries of the EU respond to the growing Russia threat and the perceived need to gain independence from the U.S. We expect all of this to exacerbate consumer price inflation and prompt higher interest rates. That outcome will likely be negative for bonds and positive for critical commodities, kind of across the range of those commodities, but especially uranium.
Thank you, Daniel. The title of Daniel's report is Update on the U.S.-China Military Balance of Power, and you can find the written version, which includes a detailed graph with numbers measuring military assets of the two countries, on the front page of the Confluence website, confluenceinvestment.com. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice, and this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.